This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sarah Bivens.
And I'm Matthew Bivens.
We had a home birth back in 2016.
So we started a podcast about it.
And then grew it into a birth brand to help future and current parents believe in their success with home birth.
This is the place to hear home birth stories along with helpful resources and tips to feel empowered and supported in your birth journey.
This is Doing It at Home. Welcome home, beautiful people. It is another great day to talk birth stories. And we have details of three birth stories wrapped into one conversation, one episode for you today. It is titled Three Planned Home Births with One Baby Born at Home with Brittany Anderson. I love this topic because it brings up a question that you might be asking or you might be thinking about for the future. Would you try again for a home birth if it didn't happen the first time? Okay, what about the second time? This is a really great thing to look at, that if you had a transfer or had some sort of different way your birth went than what you anticipated and you're processing that, how would you feel about planning for a future birth? Or if you're pregnant again, how are you processing and what are you taking into account when you're thinking about where to birth again? And so Brittany joins us and breaks down all the details and the comparisons and similarities and differences of her three births. Again, three planned for home and one completed at home. Couple of things to just make you aware of and ways you can connect with us. Check out the show notes. That is a great thing to just go to for anything related to stuff from the episode. So for instance, ways to connect with Brittany and resources she mentions and lists, as well as offers from some of our awesome partners. And then more from us, our website, book, merch, social media, all those things are there for you. So go check that out. I don't know if you can still tell that I'm a little winded when I record these intros. I'm still pregnant at the time of recording this. Definitely not when this airs, but at the time of recording this, I am very, very pregnant. And so I'm curious if any of you are picking up on my windedness, as I likely have some feet up in my ribs and my diaphragm is getting pushed on, all that great, beautiful, magical. Loving every minute of it. I may not like every minute of it, but I love every minute of it. Just putting that out there. I wonder how many of you are thinking, man, Sarah's still gasping for air over there on the mic. I am. I'm doing my very best. Okay. Couple of details of this episode with Brittany. Hospital transfer from home. Already mentioned that. Cesarean birth, VBAC, and HBAC are some of the main topics you can look forward to in our conversation. So thank you so much to Brittany. I had a really great time chatting with her. I know you'll have a great time listening to her. So check out these messages from our sponsors and then Brittany's story.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Hey, Brittany, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to have you here and chat. We got to know each other a little bit a few months ago out in California. And I just feel like from the moment I heard you talking about life and birth and babies and health, and I saw your Birth Fit sticker on your water bottle, and then we actually knew a couple of people in the birth world, I just thought, oh, yes, we need to stay connected. I need to have you on the show. So I'm really glad to have this come full circle.
Yeah, me too. I'm super excited to chat today.
Great. Will you tell me and listeners just a little bit about yourself and your family and what you're up to?
Okay. Yeah. Where do I start? So I am a women's health nurse practitioner by like my main training. We live just outside Nashville, Tennessee. I do a lot of functional medicine consulting work. So I help my life path, I truly believe, is to help women feel really empowered to steward their own healthcare. Like, I just feel like women are supposed to be the healers of their home. And that's really like historically been our role. And that's really what I want women to feel like they can come back to. So yeah, I consult with women all over the country. And, you know, when they have questions about a particular health situation or something that's going on with their pregnancy or postpartum, you know, so often women are prescribed an antidepressant, just for example, which there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, a lot of times we can dig a little bit deeper. So my background is really functional medicine, and I love getting to the root cause of things. So that's what I do a lot of. And then I get to do a lot of in-person work as well, which has been great. I have worked as a doula. I have worked as a pre and postnatal fitness professional, and I've trained other birth workers in that space, which has been amazing. And then I'm a mom to three little boys, and I've had, you know, I've had pretty much every variation of birth experience that you could imagine. And I also had a pregnancy loss. So I feel like I just have a lot of personal and professional experience, which is great because I feel very well equipped to support women in whatever they're going through. And so, you know, hasn't been the easiest journey, but it's, you know, it's totally been a blessing.
That's incredible. I know so many right now. You're right in the pocket. Like, you are amongst your people and your women who are very interested in what you have to say right now, especially when you're talking about getting to the root and being in control and the master and the steward of your own health. That is, you are here. So I'm so happy to have you here and for you to share all of that experience. And I want to direct people. I'm going to put links to all the ways for listeners can connect with you and see all the amazing things that you're creating. And I'm also wondering, where's your podcast and when can I start listening to that?
A dear friend of mine who was my doula, and we actually we've met through BirthFit. And so we are talking about that. She's a chiropractor and is finishing up her, she'll be a midwife in December, officially graduated. So we're talking about, you know, ways that we can get more, you know, we just need more resources, right? Yeah. We need more resources, but what we really need is to remember that this wisdom is within us. This is in our lineages, and we just have to come back into ourselves versus trying to look everywhere else for the information and for someone else to tell us what is right for our bodies.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Well, I'm excited for that. And I'm in full support of whatever you cook up, and I'm already subscribed. So, okay. So let's talk about some of your personal journey then, and I'm sure it ties in so much to what you do, as you've already kind of alluded to, but I guess we could go back in time a little bit and why you thought home birth for you initially, because as I understand it, that's what you were playing for with your first birth. So just tell us a little bit about that.
So when right before I went to grad school to become a NP, I ended up doing integrative health coach training at Duke. And I knew I wanted to be on the preventative medical side. I had worked as a floor nurse and on a medical surgical floor where I just saw really, really sick people. And I just kept thinking, I want to get to people before they ever get to this place in their life where they're just like on this, like, you know, turnstile of constant medical intervention and medication. I want to get to them earlier on in the process. So I did that, and it was such a beautiful way to, like, that lens then brought me into grad school, where I'm basically learning how to write a birth control pill for literally every women's health issue there is. Wow. And there's nothing about lifestyle, or very, very little. And I just happened to meet someone who was a doula, and I didn't know what that was. Okay. I had never heard the term. And, you know, I think I started reading something on the DONA website. And I just realized, like, this seems like information that nurses should know. It's all like comfort measures. And this is like the nursing model, but nurses don't get to do this because they're so consumed with the clinical piece. But like, this is why you become a nurse, because you have that heart for serving people. Right. So I just signed up for a doula training, like in the middle of my graduate program, and went, and it actually just happened to be taught by another NP. And I think that that was like the first time when I really started to get curious about birth. I already knew that I wanted to support mamas and babies. Like, that was always what I was drawn to. But, you know, that really opened my eyes to what birth looks like here in the United States and how we are failing moms. And, you know, my mom was a labor and delivery nurse for like 10 years. So I remember her coming home from her night shift and telling me about the babies that she had helped to, you know, deliver, and just being so fascinated by that. But I will never forget when I told her that I was thinking about having a home birth. She was like, absolutely not. Oh, and that's not safe. You have to have your baby in a hospital. And of course that just made me want to have a home birth even more. I think it was just, even working as a doula and attending births in the hospital, and not that you can't have an incredibly beautiful hospital experience, but I would walk through the hospital doors and I could feel just everything in my body just tighten up, and it just felt very like not safe there as a doula. So I can't imagine how the mamas were really feeling, or maybe they didn't feel that, but that was just what I was picking up on. And so I just knew that I did not feel comfortable with that. So yeah, as soon as I, you know, decided that I wanted to have my own babies, like, I just felt from the beginning that, you know, I really wanted to try to do it at home.
Gotcha. And this is typically where Matthew chimes in and asks about the partner's perspective, because yes. So I'm going to ask for him, where was your husband with that conversation and decision? And was it kind of a thing that needed some coaxing, or was he on board from the get? What was that like?
You know, I'm sure he had some reservations, but I really appreciate that he really trusted me and my judgment. He's like, this is your area of expertise. Like, he's a numbers guy. He owns a mortgage company. I'm not going to question him when it comes to like the finances and stuff, because he is really, I mean, I like to learn and I want to be like involved in that, but like, I trust him. And so I think he really felt like, okay, if you say this is safe, like, I think that I want to just support what you're saying.
That's great. That's awesome. And so what did you go into that first birth with the mindset of, okay, we're having a home birth. What were you planning, or what were you envisioning? How were you preparing?
Mm-hmm. So this is what I love to share with mamas, and pregnant mamas in particular who are about to embark on this. You can have the checklist and do all of the things right. I mean, I prepared for this pregnancy for years before I actually got pregnant. Mm-hmm. I was a doula. I had an amazing community. I had all the things. I did the exercise. I did the nutrition, you know, all the things, right? Mm-hmm. I checked the boxes, and I still ended up with a really difficult birthing situation. And so the most beautiful lesson of motherhood that I have had to repeatedly learn is that you are not in control. This is about surrendering and learning to surrender, right?
Yeah, that's very well said. Okay, so what did that look like for you? What did you have to let go of?
So, you know, plan on having my home birth. I was in prodromal labor for 14 days. Okay. So we believe, like, in retrospect, of course, I've done a lot of processing of this, and, and my like medical brain like wants to know the reason, right? Yeah. So we think that, you know, sometimes with your bag of waters, you can have multiple layers. And so I remember about 2 weeks before my son was born, I had this like gush of fluid. And so I thought my water broke. And I had been dilated to like four, like since like 35 weeks. Like we thought I was going to go really early. So anyway, I had this gush of fluid, but my midwife checked me and then it kind of stopped. And so, you know, we just didn't think anything of it, but I was contracting from then on. I would contract every night, like all night long. And then it would stop in the morning and I would go to work. So by the time I actually went to labor, I was exhausted.
Yeah.
So long story short, we think what happened was that layer broke and some bacteria probably got up there.
Okay.
And so then when my full sac actually ruptured, that bacteria was able to travel up into my uterus and then cause an infection. Mm. So I woke up at like on the day that he was born, I woke up at 3 a.m. to a burst, like a just big burst of and pressure and this huge gush of fluid. So I knew for sure my water had broken at that point. And then I was immediately in very active labor. So our team comes and we had ordered some labs probably the week before just to see, you know, what was going on. Cause I was having so much prodromal labor. I was so tired. We just wanted to make sure my body wasn't super stressed out. So long story short, my midwife was like, you know, I just feel like we need to go to the hospital. I feel like I'm a little worried. You're going to have some bleeding issues. Like the hospital's 10 minutes away. Let's go. You're going to push this baby out in no time. And we're going to come right back home. That was, you know, that's what they're telling me. And so transferred to the hospital when I was like probably 7 centimeters. And I get in there and I mean, I'm already like asking for the epidural. I was just so tired from having contracted for weeks. But I pushed through. The OB came in and she was super awesome and respectful. She was like, you guys got this. It was like 9 a.m. She's like, you guys got this. I'm going to just let you do your thing. We're going to have a baby by lunchtime. Cool. So, you know, I eventually got, they told me I was complete. And I didn't feel pushy, but I kind of started like pushing and like, you know, I was up and down with the squat bar and just in a ton of pain. And they came and checked me maybe 2 hours later and told me that, oh, actually you're 9.5 and your cervix is super swollen. And, at that point I was like, you're going to have to either kill me or give me this epidural. Mm. So got an epidural and I never progressed past that. And so it was like 5 o'clock and finally the OB comes in and she's like, I'm so sorry, but we have to start talking about a C-section. Like you have been like this for hours and now you have a fever and baby heart rate is starting to look a little funky. Like, I think you might have an infection is what's happening. And so even after that, I made her give me like 2 more hours. And even on the way to the OR, she's like, as soon as we get in there and get you prepped, like I'll check you again. Like you can push this baby out in the OR. So she
was amazing.
But you know, by the time he was actually born, I mean, I was shaking so bad. My fever was 103. So I'm shaking. They're having to just give me sedatives to hold my body still so she can cut into me. Yeah. So it was, I mean, this is a beautiful example of a time when this is a very necessary intervention, right? Like, you know, that probably saved his life.
Right. Right.
Because by the time he was born, he also had a fever. Like I'll never forget. I could feel the pressure, of course, of him coming out of my body and it was just silent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was very, very drugged. So it could have only been 30 seconds, but it seemed like, you know, 10 years before he started crying. They finally got him to cry and they, you know, took him over the warmer, wrapped him up, came and snapped one quick picture. And then he went immediately to the NICU and we spent the next 7 days in the NICU.
Gotcha. Yeah. That's quite a whirlwind there.
Wow.
I like how you highlight though, some of the key points of example of necessary. I love how your provider, how the OB was so supportive of your wishes and was there with you and communicative along the whole way, that really right up until the doors of the OR, we could still have a vaginal birth here if that's the way that it wants to go and that's the way you want it to go. You do not hear that. I don't think I've actually ever heard that in all these stories.
She was great. Wow. In our area, you know, that was almost seven years ago. You know, there's still a lot of like combativeness and, and just pettiness between OBs, especially in home birth midwives. And so, you know, you never know what you're going to get rolling up into the hospital from home. Right. And she was just so respectful and so kind. And, I really, really appreciated, you know, how she was with us.
Mm-hmm. And so to jump forward a little bit, when you become pregnant with your second, was it an immediate, I'm going to go for a home birth again? Was it not sure? Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So, you know, with the current recommendations for vaginal birth after cesarean, there needs to be 18 months in between births. Mm. So of course, as soon as my first son is born, I'm thinking in my head, okay, I can't get pregnant. I can't get pregnant, you know, until I'm 9 months postpartum because I really want to have a VBAC. I like knew immediately. Mm-hmm. I got pregnant at exactly 9 months postpartum. I had like one period because I was still breastfeeding. I was totally shocked. So I was so unprepared.
Wow.
And then here I am with this very demanding first baby, 9 month old, trying to think about what I want for my next birth. And so I actually talked to another really good friend of mine who is a nurse midwife. And she was just like, you know, you don't have the option of being in a birth center, right? Because they won't let you, most birth centers will not let you have a VBAC, or at least here, they will not let you have a VBAC. So your option is to go to the hospital. And I just really don't think you're going to get the kind of care that you want in the hospital. I think you should try this at home. So she's actually the one who convinced me. And so that birth was really different. I didn't have any prodromal labor. I was not even dilated until I actually went into active labor, but it was the same thing. My water broke at 3 a.m. immediately in active labor. I started pushing at 6. Like it was super fast labor. At 9, I roll over and I say, if you guys don't like kill me now, like I'm just going to jump off a cliff. This is horrible. I've been pushing for 3 hours. Oh. I'm exhausted. Why isn't this baby here? You know, it was awful. So we transferred to the hospital.
And I'm curious, did you have the same team from before?
I had the same team, but my other midwife friend was there. So I had two midwives, the same doula, like a really amazing team. And it was, I mean, my son and my husband were in and out. Mm. He was giving me kisses between contractions. It was just the sweetest. But yeah, I could not give this child to like rotate under my pelvis. And I'm riding the back of my doula's car, just bawling. Cause I'm like, I'm going to have another C-section. And you know, this is the same thing that happened last time. What the heck? What's wrong with my body? I'm thinking all this. And then I get to the hospital and I'm telling them like, I am fully dilated. I just need an epidural and I'm going to push my baby out. Like I'm having to say this to the nurse and the nurse is like, no, you're not. There's no way you'd be able to talk to me. And this baby would have slid out already. Mm-hmm. And so 20 minutes later, when she finally checks me, she's like, oh, the baby's right there. Like, yes, I just need an epidural and I will push this baby out. Mm-hmm. And so the OB comes in and she proceeds to tell me, well, your baby looks really bad on the monitor. You need to just have another C-section. This was a different OB, of course. And I'm looking at the monitor. She doesn't know anything about me. And I'm looking at the monitor and he's looking great. Oh, he is tolerating me beautifully. Yeah. But she just didn't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was really awful. She was terrible.
So just say that the baby doesn't look good on the monitor and to someone who doesn't have the experience or the education or just doesn't know to look at the monitor themselves and see something different is going to say, oh my gosh, okay, save my baby. Do what you need to do.
Yeah, take me back to the OR. No question.
Want
to
get home for dinner probably.
Ooh. Yes, absolutely. But she figured out pretty quick that I knew what I was talking about. So, but you know, in labor, you should not have to jump into your logical brain and start fighting. You know, like that's not what you should have to do.
Agreed.
And then she starts fighting with my midwife about, you know, why are you guys even here? Like, it's so irresponsible to try to have a home birth. I'm like, and I'm laying there like, can I just have the epidural so I can birth this baby?
Real.
And,
this is not the time for this powwow. Like,
no. And so finally I get the epidural, which, you know, y'all, the epidural is like the sweetest relief. I mean, it is just a beautiful thing. It is a beautiful, beautiful thing. So I totally understand why women want them because it's just an amazing, when you've been in that much pain. Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, get the epidural and the OB comes in. She's like, if you don't push this baby out right now, I'm taking you back. And 5 seconds later, he starts crowning.
Oh, okay.
I'll never forget. She's like sitting at the foot of the bed and I'm, you know, purple pushing as hard as I can, because I just want to prove that I'm going to have this be back. And she just flips a switch and turns into the biggest cheerleader. And she's just, oh my gosh, you're amazing. And you're doing it. And she's like, she said to me at one point, you know, I could cut you right now, but I'm just going to let him stretch you. And I'm just like, thank you. She was awful. Yes. Awful.
Gosh.
You know, he's born, he's almost completely out. And she's just yelling about how big he is. I'm like, okay, can you just wait till he's out of my body? And then we can talk about how massive my baby is.
Right.
Okay. It was something.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I got my V back. So that's, you know, that's all I cared about. But that was something.
All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about what happened next. Okay. So you got your V back. What were you thinking then in the postpartum time after that birth, whether it was just processing your previous births or were you considering and thinking about future births? What was that like for you?
I mean, I was just so thrilled. And also, you know, the difference between the recovery from a C-section and a vaginal birth, it's just nice. I mean, I had like a second degree tear. And that still didn't compare to being sliced, having my abdomen sliced open. I mean, I was up 2 days postpartum, bebopping around, and my midwife is like, get your ass in bed. What do you do? I'm like, you don't understand. I feel amazing. Like I could do anything right now. And she's like, no, get in bed. Cause I also was tandem nursing my kids. Like, postpartum was rough just because I had two such little babies. I always wanted to have at least three kids. So I knew that was on the radar, but I knew it was going to be a while because having them as close together as I did was just not ever something I thought I would do. And I don't think I would do it again.
Okay. Gotcha. So then when you did become pregnant again, how long was that, first of all? And then after becoming pregnant, What were we thinking then? We've had two transfers, a cesarean, a VBAC. Like, what do you do at that point? I don't think I've talked to many who find themselves at this stage who have had those different kind of experiences. And now, what would you do? Because I'm sure so many listening too are like, what would I do? Or we've had a lot of first time transfer stories, and I know many then think after that, where do I go from here? So I'd love to get your wisdom and feedback on that.
Yeah. So, with baby number three, I wanted to have just a very intentional, like I spent a lot of time recovering because I nursed my first son was like 28 months when he weaned. My second was like 18 months. And I just wanted time for my body to heal and just replenish. And so I was very intentional about that. And then I like very suddenly lost my dad to pancreatic cancer. And in 2019, and I had actually been planning on maybe trying to get pregnant around the time that my second son turned three, and just was dealing with a lot of obviously grief, insomnia, anxiety about that. And so I knew that was not the time to try to get pregnant. So when I was in my healing process, I started doing a lot of meditations, and I actually just started asking my baby when he wanted to, or when they wanted to come. Cause I still have always thought I was going to have a girl. So I would just be like, you know, sit for 10 minutes in the morning and just meditate on it. And I will never forget, it was October of 2019. And I very clearly heard, "Mom, I'm coming in January." And I was like, full body chills, like, okay, so you better bet I got pregnant in January of 2020. And that was the most connected I've ever been to my babies. I was able to talk with him the entire time. He told me like what he wanted to be named. Like it was just a really cool experience. But, you know, I had decided that I was going to just go ahead and have a hospital birth.
Okay.
But once you have experienced the midwifery, the home birth midwifery model of prenatal care, like, right, I don't know how you would go to hospital care, because I was not going to go sit in an office for 30 minutes or an hour to be seen for 10 minutes. And like, I just wasn't going to do that whole thing.
Yeah.
So my plan was to have my friend who's a nurse midwife. She has a great home birth practice, and she's like the only nurse midwife who has a home birth practice here. I decided to work with her. I called her before I got pregnant because she books out. And I just said, I'm getting pregnant in January and I want you to do my prenatal care. And then I'm going to transfer to the OBs at 32 weeks. And I will just have this baby in the hospital because clearly my body doesn't want to do this at home. Mm. Like, okay, let's do it. Well, you know, everyone knows what happened in 2020. Yeah. We go into lockdown and there's this global pandemic. And, so the whole time I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to have this baby in the hospital, but I'm also feeling really nervous about it because, you know, partners weren't being allowed in, you had to wear a mask, that whole thing. Yeah. And so I got to like 28 weeks and, my midwife looks at me and she's like, I just really think this baby's going to be born at home. Hmm. Like, I really think this baby's going to be born at home. And even then I was like, well, okay, look, let's just try it because I'm just really feeling uneasy about bringing my baby into a place where they're taking care of COVID patients.
Right.
Right. So yeah. So I decided to go ahead and plan for home birth. This was the first time that I'd ever actually packed a hospital bag because with the first two, I hadn't even packed a hospital bag. So I went ahead and set everything out and got everything ready in case we needed to go to the hospital. And then my third baby decided to come much earlier than his brothers. He was born, you know, like a 38 and six, I think. And the whole time I was in labor with him, I was in total denial. It's like, this can't be it. The sun's going to come up and labor's going to stop, contractions are going to stop. And, you know, this is just early labor. I couldn't believe my baby was coming that early. So I think I labored with him. It was like Friday night. I labored all night long, like slept in between contractions. I woke my husband up at maybe 3 a.m. just to make the bed because I thought my water would break just like his brothers did. That didn't happen. And then I was like going to the bathroom in the morning. I'm like, I think things are going to stop. And all of a sudden I had two really intense back-to-back contractions. And this was probably 7:30. And then I just looked at my husband. I said, you need to call Lauren now. Like, this baby is coming. So I got in my bathtub and I just never got out. I planned on being in a birth tub, but I got in my like small little bathtub and I just hung out in there. And I will never forget, like, I could feel him moving down in my pelvis. And I all of a sudden had this moment of panic because I'm like, I've never felt a baby like on my perineum because with his brother, I had an epidural. So I've never felt this sensation before. What do I tell clients? Like, how do I do this? And I'm about to feel the ring of fire. And I'm just like, I'm like, this is what's going through my head as he's crowning. But I pushed him out super slow. It was like 45 minutes of very gentle pushing. So I had no tearing and he did get, you know, my children have enormous heads. So he got a little stuck in there. So I did have to do the Gaskin maneuver, which is basically you flip your legs over and you come onto all fours. So I got out of the bathtub really quick, flipped my leg, you know, flipped over the side of the bathtub and he came right out. So it was, you know, a little scary for a second, just because my husband is thinking, what the heck is happening? Yeah. But he came out and I sat down in the bathtub and my midwife hands me my baby. And I'm still like, did this just happen? Like, this really just happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I can only imagine what was culminating there from a logical brain perspective. Like you said, you have that medical brain that's working, but then there's also this spiritual experience that you're having after this baby that you've connected with for so long and this kind of birth, you felt things you haven't felt before. It went differently. It came earlier. So many factors. I can only imagine what it was like to try to integrate all of that into yourself in that moment.
Yeah, it was just such a trip. I mean, even hours after, I'm still staring at my baby. Like, did this really happen? Am I going to wake up and I'm still going to be pregnant? Like, it was really incredible.
And how was it with the family there when you all kind of tucked in and what was that like, the bubble as it is?
So much better. And we gave, you know, my sons were, five and, three at the time or just turned four at the time. So we didn't force them to be in the room. I just gave them the option so they would come in. My middle son is really sweet. He actually got up with me at 3 a.m. and was like with me through my contraction. So he labored with me and he would fall asleep and then he would wake up and come and rub my back. So, cause my husband was asleep with our older son. So that was really sweet. And so he would come and sit in my midwife's lap and just watch. We have pictures of him just so enthralled in the experience. And then they weren't in there you know, when his was when their brother was born, but you know, they came in like 5 minutes later, and just the look on their faces, you know, just to not like have to come home from the hospital and introduce this new creature. Like they knew what was going on the whole time. They just chose not to be in the room, but they walk in and they were just immediately so in love with him and so excited to meet him. And it was really sweet. And then even, you know, the more babies you have, the worse those after pains are. Mm. So mine were really intense, and to the point where like, I really couldn't have Locke skin to skin with me. I was just so in so much pain. So my husband laid in the bed next to me and did skin to skin with him for like the first 2 hours. And I think that that was really powerful because he didn't get to do that with our other kids. And so it was really sweet to see that in him. Yeah. And now they just have the sweetest bond. And I really feel like a lot of it is because of that immediate skin to skin that they got to do.
Yeah. Wow. I think about your midwife friend too, who was planting the seed earlier on. Like, I think this is going to happen at home. And it sure did. So that's great to have people like that in your circle and supporting you and holding that space.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes. I mean, I will forever be indebted to her. She's an angel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was so sure that I wasn't going to be able to do it. And she knew the whole time, like, this is possible for you. And that was really powerful.
Yeah. Were there, I'm just curious if I can make note of any or share some with listeners, resources that were really supportive for you at any of the, in any of the journeys, whether it was to go with home birth, to go with home birth again after the first transfer, anything that stuck out?
Yeah, I think that it was really important for me to go back and like look at the data on VBACs, and it's still safer after having a C-section. It's still safer to attempt a vaginal birth than it is to have a repeat C-section. And I think that that piece doesn't get conveyed because it's way easier on your provider and your OB. If you just schedule another C-section, right? Yeah. Like they know exactly when they've got to be there, and it's just easier for them. But it's still so much better. And then, you know, even if you do have to have a repeat C-section, going into labor on your own, like that's where we get a lot of benefits from the hormonal exchange that baby gets. And just the process of labor is really important. I know we put a lot of, yes, it's important for the baby to come through the vaginal canal because of the exchange of the microbiome and all of that, but just the process of going to labor is great. So I just always encourage women to think about that. And then it really came down to like, what feels good in my body, what feels good, you know, intuitively. And I just knew that I was going to feel safer the longer I could stay at home, like the safer I was going to feel, even if I, you know, had to transfer, I wanted to be in my home and my environment for as long as possible. And then, I love spinning babies. I went and did the spinning babies training while I think I was like 20 weeks pregnant. So I went and did the spinning babies for providers training and did a lot of their exercises throughout my pregnancy. And I felt like that was really helpful. And then my midwife and her whole team were spinning babies trained. My doula was spinning babies trained. So I made sure that I had all these people in place that like knew how to help baby get into a good position. Because I just remember with the first two feeling my babies get caught in the same place in my pelvis. And I had a lot of fear around that. Like my babies have big heads. They're going to get caught. There's something wrong with my pelvis and I'm not going to be able to get them out. And that was like not even a thing with my third.
Yeah. And how does this play a part, factor into, influence the work that you do? How does your different birth experiences and the different factors of them, I'm sure it's in big and small ways, but anything that just comes up for you right now that you'd like to share as far as what it means for you to have had these different kinds of births and to be in the space that you're in and supporting women and families like you are?
What I commonly hear from my clients is that they really appreciate that I have had a C-section, I've had epidurals, because sometimes they feel really judged. Like not that their doulas or their providers aren't amazing, but maybe their doula has only had home births or has only had unmedicated births. Mm-hmm. And so they feel like, well, if I don't have that, I'm failing them, right? Mm-hmm. Which is not, I'm sure that is not like what their provider or doula is putting off, but that's the feedback that I often get. Like, I love that you've had all of these experiences. So no matter how my experience goes, like, I'm going to feel supported because you've been there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was really, really crappy when I was going through it personally, but now I can really see, like, this happened exactly the way that it needed to, because these are the lessons that I needed to learn so that I could fully step into my calling of supporting women and meeting them where they are on their journey.
I love that. And that's the question that comes up a lot for transfer stories when we have them on the podcast, whether they're still really, the women are still really in the thick of figuring it out and healing it and coming to terms with it, or they might be years past it. Wherever you're at in the journey is where you're at. And it's, I don't think it's ever a completely done thing. There's always things we can relearn or it can come up. But how to have your own version of what you just shared, that for you, it tied in with this calling and it tied in with what you're really passionate about. And you don't have to be a birth worker to be able to connect what your birth experience was with who you are, what you're up to, who you could inspire, who you could support, or just what example you could be. You don't necessarily have to be in there as a doula or a birth worker. I just think it's really beautiful that you share that, because I think that's encouraging. And I think that other women who might be processing or healing from things not going the way that they originally intended, how can I possibly connect with a purpose around this that serves me and could potentially serve others, doesn't have to, but just so that I can be more peaceful.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to, share your story in appropriate settings, or like have the time to process it, write it down. I have found so much benefit from just writing it down and sharing in the right spaces. Like, please don't go word vomit your very traumatic birth experience on an expecting mama. Right. We do that because we need to feel heard and be seen. I totally get why we do that. But I mean, you know, I would say I was having a home birth and people would say, oh my gosh, I almost died. I almost bled out. And if I wouldn't have been in the hospital, like, you know, me and the baby would have for sure died. And, you know, you don't need to say that. Right. But go to a therapist or go to a group of new moms and where everyone is sharing their birth stories and process it appropriately. Because then from that place, you may be able to share some really beautiful wisdom with, you know, an expectant mama, not just like unload your trauma on them.
Yeah. Great, great advice. Great feedback. As we close up here, is there anything else that you would like to share as far as words of wisdom, things you might have done differently, or something that was surprising, something you'd just like to leave listeners with?
What I tend to find, which is unfortunate, is that people usually have a really crappy first birth experience before they go and find the education and the information. Yeah. We're just not very good at preconception planning as a country. And that's what I love more than anything. I love helping women prepare for pregnancy, because one, it's going to influence their health and the health of their pregnancy and their baby and that family line, like going forward. And two, like, we can prevent some of these traumatic experiences from happening, because you don't have to go through them. This is not just like part of it. Like, you can have a really beautiful first birth experience and a really great pregnancy and postpartum. But we just have to be more proactive on the front end and not have that terrible experience and then go and get all the education.
Well said. Yes, absolutely. Because there's a lot of the doing it at home story pie, so to speak, is those second, third births that come out of trauma, come out of I didn't know what I didn't know, or this is just what I thought you were supposed to do, or any and all of those things. So I'm so happy that you are out there in that proactive space and doing what you do to carry that forward and to move us all collectively forward there. It's so important. I'm really grateful to you. Can you list off for us the ways that people can connect with you and find you?
Yeah. So I'm really active on Instagram. Great. I haven't really gotten on the TikTok train. I'm kind of working on it, but not really. But Instagram, it's just Britt, B-R-I-T-T-E Anderson. And my business is called A Womb in Bloom. So awombinbloom.com is my website. You can message me through there. Right. But those are probably the easiest routes. And, you know, I love answering questions. I try to put a lot of education out there, doing my best with, you know, the social medias. And then I really hope, yeah, I'd love to start a podcast. I feel like we just need to keep getting more information out there.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Thank you so much, Brittany. Really appreciate you. It's been awesome having you.
Thank you for this opportunity. Really. Yeah. Love speaking with you.
Quick note about the Doing It at Home podcast. Matthew and I are not doctors or medical professionals, and nothing we say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. If you have medical or health-related questions, please take them to a trained professional. We're here simply to entertain you with stories and conversations about pregnancy, birth, and parenthood.
Does your father know you're listening to this podcast? Well, when you're done, why don't you stop by and check out a show that is 100% dad-approved. Dadages. Hi there, I'm Chad Higley. If you're looking for useful insights and practical advice you can actually apply to work, family, education, philanthropy, and just life in general, check out Dadages. That's Dadages, wherever you listen to your podcasts.